Ladies and gentlemen, good day. Welcome to Unipath India Limited Q3 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by Go India Advisors. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Monali J. from Go India Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Muskan. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Q3 FY24 earnings call of Unipath India Limited. We have on the call with us Mr. Gurdeep Soni, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Paramjit Singh Soni, Vice Chairman and Executive Director, Mr. Rohit Maheshwari, Group Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Vivek Maheshwari, Vice President, Financial Planning and Analysis and Investor Relations. We must remind you that the discussion on today's call may include certain forward-looking statements and must be therefore viewed in conjunction with the risk that company faces. I will now request the management to take us through the financials and the business update, subsequent to which we will open the floor for questions and answers. I will now hand over to Mr. Gurdeep. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Hey, thank you so much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the quarter 3 FY24 earnings call of Unipath India Limited. We sincerely hope that all of you are doing very well. Prior to getting into the summary of the reported quarter, like always, I would like to reiterate that the core of our organizational functioning is guided by the principles of passion, innovation, integrity, excellence, and teamwork. The team has been working diligently and with passion over the years to establish Unipath as a preferred supplier to global off-highway vehicle markets. Unipath is present both in the OEM and aftermarket segments in the off-highway industry with strong global operating model and wide customer base comprising of over 125 customers from across the globe. Our products are shipped to over 25 countries worldwide. We at Unipath believe that through our off-highway focus, well-positioned product offerings, and marquee customer portfolio, we have a robust global business model to cater to the long-term trends of food security prioritization, as well as infrastructure built out and modernization. With the above backdrop, let me spend next few minutes sharing thoughts with respect to the current operating environment and business highlights for quarter 3 of FY24. The North America agricultural equipment market demand continues to be soft and in the short term, especially for smaller equipment. As guided previously, inventory destocking at customers and continued through quarter 3. This destocking impact has largely bottomed out now, and quarter 4 is expected to have very minimal adverse impact on this account. In fact, the aftermarket segment is witnessing early signs of demand stabilization and revival. The North American construction equipment market is stable with infrastructure-driven demand. Demand from Europe-based OEM customers is stable to marginally down, and the demand in the Indian domestic tractor market has been witnessing some softness in the current fiscal year. Export models are more impacted due to the small agriculture softness in export geographies. With the four main reasons in the backlog and in line with earlier guidance, quarter 4 is expected to be sequentially higher. End market softness persists, but being set off going forward into the next few quarters by new business coming in. Following projects are poised well for either pilot or commencement during quarter 4 or FY24. The UTV 3-point linkage pilot batch sales to end customers have started. First sales to the new aftermarket customer, which is the second largest retail store group in USA, have also started. First sales under the
to leave your message, press 1. To re-record your message, press 2.
I'm going to repeat that again. First sales under the large project from the world's largest construction equipment OEM are also going smoothly. The company's business continues to generate healthy cash flow, lending further strength to the balance sheet. Also, the dividend payout continues to be higher than guided with a dividend policy. During the current phase of mixed external environment, we continue to focus on operational efficiencies and investments for growth and ensuring readiness of our facilities and resources. We also continue to augment our digital capabilities, aiding agility and optimization. Uniparts has built a resilient business model and is confident to withstand the short-term challenges and emerge stronger and better positioned for future growth. We are focusing on utilizing current short lean patch by investing for growth and ensuring readiness of our facilities and resources. Our focus and efforts are aligned with the medium-term business plan for achieving the targeted growth in coming years. We continue to focus on our operational endeavors, leverage our competitive strengths and strong financial profile to optimize the opportunities emerging in the swiftly changing and evolving operating environment. And with this, I would like to hand over to Vivek Maheshwari to discuss the details of our financial performance during the reported quarter. Thanks, and Vivek, over to you, please. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, all. I would like to share the following financial and business highlights for the quarter ending 31st December 2023. Revenue from operations for Q3 came in at Rs. 259 crore, which is a year-on-year change of -21.7%. Reported EBITDA for quarter 3 was Rs. 44.4 crore, which changed year-on-year by -48.1%. EBITDA margin reported at 17.1% for Q3. It may be noted that corresponding period last year had a one-off favorable other income element of approximately 5.6 crores. PAT for the quarter came in at Rs. 25.9 crores, which is approximately 54% lower year-on-year. Operating cash flow generation for the reported quarter was at approximately 46 crores. The net working capital, comprising of big three elements of inventory, receivables and payables, as number of days of revenue from operations on trailing 12-month basis was approximately 148 days. Working capital comprising of the big three elements improved in absolute value by approximately 34 crores. The business therefore continues to generate higher than guided cash flow. Uniparts balance sheet continues to be net debt free with book net cash position at approximately 107 crores at the end of December 2023. CapEx for the quarter has been approximately 6 crores. Board has declared second interim dividend for financial year 23-24 of Rs. 6 per share, totaling to approximately 27 crores payout to the shareholders. Inflationary pressure on operating costs remains in the medium term to be partially mitigated through operating efficiencies. Macro concerns over global economic slowdown, geopolitical uncertainties, and impact of worldwide high interest rate continues to remain a key monitorable. With this summary, I would like to hand the conference back to the moderator for question and answer session. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for the moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the Yash from Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes.
So, my question is, in recent past years, we had multiple fire incidents at our plants. Can you briefly talk about some of these incidents, what led to such incidents and what are corrective steps we have taken?
Not in very recent past years. I mean, the last major one was in 2019. So it's been a while. And there was some electricity short circuit situation in the facility. And we have been taking adequate care, like always. And no such incidents have happened in last 2 to 3 years.
Okay, because your DRHP says that there were 4 incidents since 2019. So that is why I'm coming with this.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. 2019 was the last, those incidents. Which
there is no incident after 2019. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and 1 to ask question. The next question is from the line of Rishabh Shah from Book Lady Rock PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. Am I audible?
Yes.
So you had an inorganic opportunity in Europe on the hydraulic side, which didn't work out in our favor. So I wanted to know, what was your learning from that?
So this was a long time ago. I think the one in Europe, we did the acquisition back before the Lehman crisis. And in Europe, once the downturn hit, it's obviously very difficult to downsize the companies over there and to reduce expenses. So it was a tough call for the next 2-3 years period after that. And also we were not able to, the business was not in a situation where you could transfer product to India to lever the India manufacturing capability. So we basically took a situation to say, no, this doesn't work. And hence why we actually sold the business back. We had bought it from a customer and I sold it back to the same customer, took a small haircut, and we still work with the same customer. And we brought in all the hydraulic technology to India. But really took a small haircut of maybe just about, if I remember, about €500,000 is all we lost on that. But pretty much realized that if you're going to do a significant amount of number of people in Europe, then that's way more difficult compared to the U.S. And hence in Europe, better to acquire companies which are higher on the technology but lower on people.
Okay, okay. So my second question is, so whenever you introduce a new product into the market, so how difficult is it to comply with the international standards?
For us, it's not that difficult because we've been doing it forever for so many years, and we have all the marquee customers globally. So I think all our facilities are operating to a certain standard and for many, many years. So for us, it's business as normal. I would imagine it may be difficult for some other people, but for us, it's business as normal, frankly. It's something that we've always been doing.
Would it be difficult for a new company or a peer of your company to comply with the international?
I would imagine it would be difficult because just to get qualification, just a vendor code with any of the big majors, it's a very, very involved process. I mean, even for example, in recent times when I had to just take on somebody like a Caterpillar, it takes 5 to 6 years just to get in and, you know, to do that despite us having so much stuff going on. So the entry barriers are fairly high. And, but obviously for us, we have the advantage that the top 10 agricultural companies of the world, all top 10 are our customers, and out of the top 10 construction equipment companies of the world outside of China, 5 are our customers. So for us, I think we already have a reputation in the market, which kind of helps us get more business. And I think our systems are, frankly, up there in any case. So.
Okay. And so my next question is, so what is the replacement cycle of your products and how frequently do you need to replace them?
The three-point linkage would have a cycle in terms of 8 to 10 years. And even on the PMP side, these are wear parts, so they will wear off in about 5 to 7 years. But most of the spare parts that we sell for these or for the replacement market is actually sold to the OEMs only. So they control all of that. So our sales, when we say our aftermarket sales, that's for a different set of parts, which is more the well-fit parts. All the OEM spare part sales are actually managed by the OEMs. Huh?
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. I'll join back in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask question. The next question is from the line of Chirag Philoke from Ratnatraya Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So I had a couple of questions. Just on the small ag demand, and you know, we see this in some of the American manufacturers also in their own reports. There seems to be a lot of weakness even in the end market. I'm just wondering if the management can talk a little bit about what are you seeing on the end market that is this softness. When did you see such a last cycle? And a little bit of color on what are the drivers for this market. Is it just real estate typically, so hence interest rates in some ways? Just a little bit of color on that. That's my first question.
So let's talk a little bit about on the agricultural side on small tractors, which in the United States is more, let's say when we talk below 70 horsepower, we term them generally as compact and utility tractors. So the application is definitely not farming for them. These are, you know, basically for utility purposes and even for, you know, for large property owners to just manage their property. So it's more a consumer product here and a utility product rather than a farming product. The drop in demand, if you're looking at all the major commentary, then the drop in demand, you know, this last year has been for most people between 10 to 12%, but the channel inventory was so high that that took a while clearing off, and the actual reduction in manufacturing that some of these people did was more closer to the 30-35% region. So almost about, even though the market went down by 10-12%, the overall reduction was close to 30-35%. And this is a significant one, but then it also comes on the back of all the, during COVID, there was a massive increase and all the sales were very, very high at that stage. So this is a bit of an anomaly just now. But having said this, now most of it is kind of weaning away. Like we mentioned earlier, most of the inventory destocking is over. I imagine the demand is still soft. We still see like a mid-single-digit low demand. But compared to last year, this year we will see a growth simply because you are not seeing the inventory destocking happening anymore. So compared to last year, you will see growth coming through now.
Understood, sir. Understood. Just on the new customer that who sort of commercialization will also start, the aftermarket customers whose commercialization will start in Q4, I think it's mentioned in the presentation. Little bit more color on that. What kind of quantum is that customers? Where do you think it's going to end up? Maybe, you know, in the medium term. And also on the new order flow, is there any quantification on what kind of commercialization of the new order flow is possible this year?
So the new customer that we've taken on, that's more in the aftermarket, and this is a conglomerate which has put together about 800 stores in the U.S. This is the second one, second largest in the U.S. The largest one was Tractor Supply Company, which is also a customer of ours and has close to 2,200 stores now. So to put it in perspective, firstly, in the U.S., there may be a total of only 3,700 to 4,000 stores, and we are now servicing over 3,000 of those. So I think we've got a nice distribution channel into all of this. So this, and then the sales of this have already started now. So in this quarter, we've already, the first shipments have already started leaving, and I think the whole program is launching for them. It'll get into their warehouses in this quarter, and starting early spring, so late spring in April, I think it's already going to be in all the stores now. So it's all on track over there. This program eventually, to put it in perspective, right now with Tractor Supply, I think they're already like a $10 million account with us with 2,200 stores. These people have about 800 stores, so we do expect that this will also become like a $4 to $5 million account once the whole thing is fully settled. But in the big, it'll take time to get in over there, maybe 2 to 2.5 years for all the the full sales potential to come. So initially it will ramp up with a couple of million and then kind of end up in that number after about 2 years. So.
Understood, sir. And the new order flow, the China plus one order flow that sort of is also mentioned, is there going to be any commercialization of that flow in this financial year, in the new coming financial year? Or
also, absolutely. In fact, that's already started. The one that we were, the bigger one that we had from Caterpillar, which we were talking about earlier during our roadshow as well, that's launched on track. So the first shipments are happening actually in this quarter itself. And in the next year, you're going to see start seeing the full year impacts of that. So now it's pretty much running on track. And that itself was a $9 to $10 million plan. So that's already started now. Also at the same time, the third one, which we were the main project that we were looking at on the launch of the new product on the UTV implements, as well as the, you know, the 3-point system for it. There also the pilot batches are shipping out in this quarter itself. So frankly, all of the stuff which we were talking about earlier is actually all kicking in Q4 now.
Understood, sir. And from typically from inquiries to commercialization or shipments of orders, what is the lead time that we generally take?
If it's in the aftermarket, an existing product, it can happen in 4 to 6 months. If it's an OEM product for a new truck, new model, it can even be 2 years. If it's an outsource of an existing product, which is happening on some of the China Plus One, it happens in about 12 months time. So it varies depending on what the project is.
So new products, it takes the longest. The replacement product from another supplier, the middle point, and existing products, just placing in the aftermarket is the shortest turnaround.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just last question from my side, and I'll get back in the queue. On the gross margin front, this quarter has been decent. Is there any element of freight, coming out? How should we look at that? Was there a freight in the base that is not there now? Because you charged at actuals there, if I understand it correctly, could you just talk a little bit about that, sir?
Sure. We frankly, even in the last call, we've been saying, hey, look at freight and material and everything together for our gross margins. And when you look at that together, then the gross margins are pretty much in same in line with what they were earlier. So freight has come off from there. So freight has probably reduced from the high levels by maybe down by 2 to 3 percentage points from there. So
you would think of gross margins more in the 64-65% range. Is that how we should think about it? Including freight.
Yeah, the gross margin is 64.5, but if you look at it, gross margin together with the freight, then it's at about 60.8% is what you should look at. So it's about 60-61%, which includes the freight as well. All right?
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you for this option.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and 1 to ask question. The next question is from the line of Jaimin Desai from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my questions. Could you remind us of the kind of opportunities that are being thrown up through the trend of dual shoring in clients apart from Caterpillar? What are the kind of opportunities coming your way? And secondly, encouraging to see commencement of supplies of 3PL for UTVs. Congratulations for that. How large can this opportunity be for us from a mid to long-term perspective?
We've stated earlier that we believe that this will be a $20 to $25 million size in a 4 to 5 year period. That's the size of the UTV, ATV that we believe we will get from this. Coming back on the China Plus One, other than Caterpillar, we've done a lot. Bobcat has been awarding us significant new projects. Case New Holland has awarded us more new projects from this. So you are seeing more and more OEMs do this. And frankly, we are now, other than seeing not just interest coming in for India, but we are also getting a lot of interest where people are looking to see if things can be done with Mexico as well. So we will possibly have to look at this entire nearshoring and see what we can do to service from a Mexican standpoint as well. A lot of the small equipment manufacturers seem to be moving their manufacturing from the U.S. actually to Mexico. So Bobcat is moving. They've already said that they're going to move some of their compact track loaders into Mexico by 2026. And so they're asking us to follow them over there. For us, it's an easier switch because the product comes from India. So instead of coming to the U.S., it just goes to Mexico. I think that's the beauty of our system, that we can still easily adapt to all this. But you are seeing a lot of shift happen in all of this. So Bobcat is giving a lot. Case New Holland is doing a lot on this. And obviously Caterpillar, we are executing with many other divisions within Caterpillar. So earlier it was just the building and construction product division. Now it's the ground engagement tools division. And so there are different divisions of Caterpillar which are now getting on board as well.
Understood. And so consequently, the share of warehousing in our revenue mix would continue to go higher and higher towards the 47-48% mark.
We are on track for that. Frankly, right now, because some of the aftermarket business slowed down, which was some of it was on the direct side, if you look at it currently, it's already, Vivek, are we already at the 47-48% just now, Vivek?
Yes. YTD is in the 46-47% range. Primarily because
it's already over there. So once the aftermarket picks up, that would have dropped it down again. But because of all the warehouse business going up, I still believe the guidance we had given for 47-48% over the next 3-5 years, I think that still remains.
Okay. And on the PMP side, you've spoken in the past about the U.S. infra bill. Would that be one of the main drivers still for that side of business, and what other drivers would be there?
The construction business has multiple other drivers. Infra bill is one of them. U.S. housing is obviously a major one, and that is a little bit slow just now because of the interest rates. Having said that, the new home builds are still tracking to about 1.45 to 1.5 million run rate on homes, which, you know, to put it in perspective, before the crisis happened in 2008-09, it had gone up to 1.7, 1.8. Long-term average used to be 1.4, 1.5 million, and then the Lehman crisis caused it to go down to as low as 600,000. So pre-COVID, with all this stuff happening, we were still at the 1.6 million, but still the run rate is maintaining at the long-term average of 1.4 to 1.5 million just now. So the U.S. home market still, despite the high interest rates, I think remains fairly strong. And the new home inventory is very, very low. So still, I think you will continue to see reasonable demand there. So the construction equipment actually has been the brighter side of the business. Because of that, now PMP, which used to be maybe 40% of our business, and 3PL used to be like 55% of our business. Today, actually, the PMP is about 55% of our business, and 3PL is about 42-43%. So this is the nice part about our business. You know, when I used to say earlier, we operate in cyclical industries, and we de-risked our business model by going partly into construction, partly into ag. And that way, even if a down cycle happens in one industry, the other industry carries you. So right now, despite the down cycle in the ag, the construction is at least providing a good boost to us.
Understood. Finally, two questions from my side, and I'll get back in the queue. On the hydraulics and fabrication side, I remember you talking about looking for inorganic opportunities there. Is there any progress on that front? And secondly, just from a short-term perspective, wondering if you are affected by this whole thing going on around the Red Sea. Are you seeing any impact of that at all? Thank you, sir.
Yes. I'll answer the second question first. The Red Sea impact, definitely it's there. I think we've seen freight rates increase by about $1,500 to $2,000 a container, and I think more importantly, it's taking another 15 days for the shipments to come. So I think we're back again to kind of planning for a little bit more lead time just now till this sorts out, because they are having to circle around the whole continent to come through just now. Having said that, I think from a delivery perspective to customers, with some of the inventory that we have. We are still monitoring that closely, and we're able to maintain all of that. So there's no outages happening based on that. In terms of so what was the other question, the earlier one?
Friction and hydraulics.
Yeah. So we've identified more companies over there. I think we are in conversation with a few, but nothing is at a very close stage just now, except a lot of active conversations are happening. No?
Understood. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask question. The next question is from the line of Chetan Vora from Abacus Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Would like to understand, now the channel inventory is almost, we are done with the destocking part of it. So going ahead, you know, the considering the quarter four and the next year, how does it look like in addition to the low base of this year, sir? How the demand is shaping up, particularly from this quarter onwards and the next year?
So sequentially in quarter four, you will start seeing the growth in any case, because quarter three has been low, and I think you will see some double-digit growth there. And as you go into the next year also, like I'd indicated, I think we still, by quarter one of the next fiscal year, you will not just see sequential growth, you should also see, you know, growth related to the previous quarter as well. So that cycle is going to begin in Q1 on FY25. And we do expect to see, like I said earlier, about a mid-teens growth in this next year easily.
But sir, if the channel inventory is almost, we are done with it, so next year anyways it was going to gain on a low base of this year, but are we seeing some constructive demand revival in the system, or it will be just on a low base and we are not in a position to see or foresee as of now how the demand will be shaping up?
I think there are multiple things happening. Like I said, the small tractor market, even though it's going to be, it's not growing, it's still, last year was down like 12%, and a lot of the inventory destocking happened. This year we are going to see maybe still a 4-5% drop on that demand, but the destocking will not happen, so at least you are not going to see a reduction, you're going to see an improvement. However, on the large ag equipment side, I think you're getting close to the cycle now where the peak cycle will come. Now the American growth receipts of farmers, if you look at the last peak, typically it's a cyclical industry. If you remember, even on the talk, I would say, hey, the typical cycle should have peaked in FY23 or 24, but was extended, and we think that the peak will go to FY25. Well, that has happened now, and the large ag, I think, is going to slow down a little bit now. So we are seeing early signs of that. What you are looking at is a situation where the American farm receipts, which in the last cycle were averaging about $110-115 billion a year for these farmers as net receipts, net income. During these last few years, it actually went up. It went up to 140. Then in last year, it actually went up to 180 billion. This year, it's dropped back to about a 140 number, which is still way higher than the last peak of 110, but it is obviously lower than the 180 number. And so you are seeing some of that slowdown come in the large ag cycle. Now, construction seems to be going okay, and all the new business seems to be going okay. So those are the guiding things that are happening just now.
So, and in addition to the revenue growth in mid-teens, as what you highlighted, how do we see the margin profile to improve?
I think the margins will continue to remain in the 20-21% EBITDA range. Right now, you're seeing a bit of a reduction over here because of the delever impact and some of the new business expenses that we did upfront. But otherwise, you will see next year we are back into the 21% region.
Okay. And lastly, the CAGR growth, what you were mentioning earlier, of 15% to 18% sales growth and 20% PAT growth, do you maintain that stance organic?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And so long term has not changed. You're going through the cycle now, and I think for the long term, I'm not changing the stance.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask questions. The next question is from the line of Abhishek from Auralis Capital. Please go ahead.
Am I audible, sir? Hello? Yeah? Hello? I just wanted to understand, who are our major competitors globally?
So, again, there are multiple and different segments. So, when I look at the three-point linkage, if I look at the segment above 70 horsepower tractors, then it's essentially two major ones. One is CBM in Italy, the other is GKN Walterscheid in Germany. Having said that, GKN Walterscheid in Germany is also a customer for me. If I look at the below 70 horsepower tractors on three-point linkage, in the Indian market, we have people like Sotrac and some smaller companies. And then in Japan, we have a competition with a company called Delica, but Delica is also a customer for me. So we seem to be in the foreign markets, at least at a situation where some of our competition is also our customer, because we are sitting in a low-cost industry, you know, region. On the PMP side, we have competition in the U.S. from local manufacturers like General Grind, which is predominantly produced in the U.S., and then obviously you have the China ones, which is where our opportunity is, because a lot of the China ones are actually now getting replaced. So,
thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manu Jindal from Torin Technology Solution. Please go ahead.
Am I audible, sir?
Yes.
Hello. Yeah, good morning, sir. Sir, just, I have a couple of questions. The very first question is about the variance in EBITDA margins. Like, as compared to last quarter, it has gone from some 26% to 17.2%. Is it due to operating leverage, or can you just give a bit of a flavor on that, please?
Sure. Vivek, you want to take that?
Yeah. So, on a sequential basis, if you focus, it's purely operating deleverage, because the revenue has come down by, let's say, 33-34 crores. And, you know, if you put together the EBITDA and the fixed cost, close to, you know, 33-35% of that is lost, I mean, on the, you know, lower sales. So that's the key difference on a sequential basis. Year on year, you know, there were some other incomes in the base quarter, and there were some inventory valuation tailwinds as well. So it's not strictly comparable that way. But rest of it is operating deleverage again, because the number over there was much higher.
Majority is the operating deleverage as well.
Yeah, but if you look at the 25.8 that you're looking for last year, like, we said that had one-time things. I've always been maintaining that we were always more closer to 21%. So 21% was more the normalized one.
Sure. And sir, what about the CSM versus agriculture margins? While the revenue breakup is given in the presentation, what about the EBITDA margins, or some sort of margin profiling? Can you just provide? That would be really helpful.
So these are in similar ballpark. Actually, what matters is, and what makes it vary is, you know, the channel by which these are being sold, or what we call as delivery model. Because locally manufactured and supplied locally to OEMs in the same geography like India and US, that tends to be slightly, you know, on the lower side of the range, which is, let's say, 10-12% kind of EBITDA margin. While the highest margins comes if these are routed to our warehouses, which are, you know, high 20s kind of margins. So it's a band or a spectrum, and delivery channel pretty much, you know, defines what the margins are. And otherwise, between the product verticals, there's not much difference.
Okay. Sir, just now you mentioned in the last question that one of your German and Japan competitors are also your customer. How is it that? Is it just because of the labor arbitrage, or how do they exactly become the customers? Can you just throw the light on that?
For example, let's take up Telica in Japan. So obviously their cost structures are higher than ours. So for us, how that happened was we were selling to Kubota, and Kubota, you know how Japanese customers are, if they, their incumbent supplier was this other company and they like to maintain long-term relationships. So when Kubota moved to us, they moved certain tractor models and other tractor models and said, hey, we want to continue with the existing supplier, but can you supply these guys? So technically we are supplying to those guys and then those guys take it from there. It's just the way how Japanese companies will operate, right? I'm lesser sensitive how my product gets there as long as it gets there. So, and then if you look at the other one with Voltashide, when we look at, so they make certain parts of the, they have more of the draft links and the hooks over there for certain applications in which they had patents. And for all the other product, which involves a lot of the forging, machining, and lower cost stuff, we support those products from India. So on the full system, they'll buy partial things from us, and the rest they do themselves over there. Okay?
Sure, sir. And, sir, what about the, like, this year would be the U.S. elections as well? That is my very first question. Like, what have you in the past seen the impact of U.S. elections on the spendings in agriculture sector, number one? Number two is, what about the investment by the current Indian government in real estate? Are we in any way leveraging those investments towards our company? So these two questions.
U.S. elections typically don't impact the farm economy here. I think, yes, because the farm policies in general don't, I think they last through administrations. I don't see that that will make any difference to the farm economy here. And again, the infrastructure bill, I mean, these are longer term things. They are already in play. The U.S., I think the way we like to say it here is that it's better that no governance happens, because you have three branches of the government, and, you know, even when an election changes, typically it's very unusual that a single party has the Congress and the Senate and the presidency together. So essentially to get anything done is very, very difficult. And it's messy, which keeps the government out of the business's way. So in a manner
no,
that
no,
kind of...
Sir, I was asking about the Indian opportunity in real estate, towards the, you know, infrastructure sector, which the government is investing in. Are we focusing our CFM sector, CFM sales towards India, given the stance that there's a lot of infrastructure investments happening in India?
We work with the domestic OEMs in India, but that market is significantly smaller for us compared to the foreign markets just now. Well, it's going to be a very growing market in the future, but currently the base for that is very, very small.
Sure. And sir, any new patents or any new patents or IP which we have applied, can you throw the light on that? This is my last question only.
So we basically had the one for the hooks, which I had mentioned earlier, so that we could extend on the greater than 70. So that's the only one. And then when we did the design the three-point linkage for the UTV, ATV, and there we designed a particular features for which we have applied for some patents.
Sure. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mitul Shah from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, thank you for opportunity. Sir, first question is on EBITDA margin. Right now we are saying that our warehousing is around 47% kind of a number in terms of overall contribution. And because of operating leverage, we went below 16%. So going forward, when this other segment will pick up and warehousing will go down, so still we are confident of doing 20-21% type of margin over medium term? Or how this operating leverage benefit versus inferior mix is going to play out?
So as far as the warehousing model is concerned, like I said, original base case was that we were having like 43-44% of our sales. I said we'll go to 47-48% on that. And right now it's already favorable to the 46, and I think it'll remain there or higher. So I don't see that causing anything negative over there. The operating deleverage, only occurred just now because of the lower sales, and I think you are going to see the turnaround come in any case now. You will sequentially you'll see it in quarter four, and sequential as well as year to year you'll already start seeing from quarter one of next year. So I think this is very, very short term. It'll come back to the 20-21% to answer your question. It'll come back to that.
So just follow up on that. Is there anything one-time specific that despite 47% warehousing margins going significantly lower, apart from operating leverage, anything one-time impacted in this quarter?
There are minor ones, Vivek. I think there are some maybe expenses based on some new business startups and stuff like that, where we, you know, when you start up a new business, there's some extra tooling expenses and stuff like that. But nothing earth-shattering over there. Okay.
So second question is on, again, agri demand. You highlighted earlier that the larger tractor is closer to peak out and may witness decline or undergo down cycle. Is there similar situation for smaller tractor also, more or less similar?
No, the lower tractor, like I said, that already you had the big decline already in the last year. You will have a minor decline in this year, but that was more the inventory, you know, destocking channel inventory coming out. So that kind of went through the whole cycle. I think the lower cycle is almost behind us, and that will essentially should, by next year, should already be climbing up back again. The large one, I think I'm just giving early indications that the peak is now here, and now you will start seeing a decline. We are starting to see OEMs cut back on schedules on the large tractors right now. So when each time we look at our EDIs looking forward, now you can see that whatever demand they had forward, they're actually cutting that down now. So we can see the early impact of that.
Sir, lastly, on the growth, as you highlighted, Q4 would be sequentially double-digit growth. Of course, yes. It is supported by very low base. But if we look at in terms of, not exactly asking for a number, but would that be better than this Q4, Q1, Q2 also?
Would be better than what? It is better than the previous quarters, right? So.
Yeah, better than Q2, I understood. Q3, I understand, because of the very low base. But that double-digit growth you are highlighting, so would that grow over Q1 or Q2 number also?
I believe so.
Okay. And lastly, on FY24 outlook, considering all these slight negative in terms of agri demand tapering down, continue to decline, maybe marginally, still we are confident of doing healthy double-digit growth?
Yes, the number that I gave you of mid-teens is after all that. Because we can already see that, right? And I think we're benefiting from the new business coming in. So clearly it's a combination, in fact. If the large ag had not come down, I would have even gone way higher than this. So I'm already factoring that in.
And for that also, we are confident of margin of 20-21% next year itself?
Yes.
Thanks, sir, and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to 2 questions per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Rishabh Shah from Bluelay Rock PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for the opportunity. So, what other product line are we planning to introduce in the coming years? Are we looking for a diversification in our product line?
No, but we continue to add new products in the product platforms we've chosen, like, for example, on the fabrication and hydraulic, new things are coming. And I think other than that, as a complete new product line, we are not bringing anything different. We will simply grow the existing platforms. So our growth is going to come, like I said, on the 3PL side from greater than 70 horsepower tractors. That's where the growth is going to come. PMPs, there's still a lot of growth potential still sitting geographically as well, because right now we're still growing a lot in Europe and Japan. And the US with the China plus one is giving us enough over there. And then On the hydraulic and fabrication, those are the two platforms on which we are continuing to add new businesses and new product over there.
Right. And sir, I wanted to know about the warehousing margins. You said you wanted to increase it up to 47-48%. How close are we towards that journey and what steps are we taking to achieve that target?
I didn't say that we will increase margins to 47-48%. I said the amount of our share of sales of warehousing is going to be of our total sales was 47-48%. We're already at 46-47 just now.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Am I audible?
Yes, Vaibhav.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is, due to the election in the US this year, is there any risk of the $1 trillion infrastructure bill sort of being retracted?
No, none at all. I think that's all done. It's all moving ahead. Bills which are passed, I don't think they ever go back on that stuff. So all that is under action. I think there is no risk to that, Vaibhav.
Okay. And also, could you explain the the value chain on the distribution side in the aftermarket segment? Who are the players and what is the value chain there?
So in the US, obviously, you have the bigger distributors, but which we used to work with earlier. But now I think because of their own warehousing here, we've gone directly to the retail channels. So typically you see, one, you have the large OEMs who have their own dealerships, right? So you can service and all these dealerships will also carry not just their own parts, but also these ill-fit parts. So in that context, for example, all the Deere dealerships in the US already carry our stuff because we work through one of our customers to do that. We do the same, and then you have a similar thing. You have what we call as farm and fleet stores. This is what I mentioned when you look at a company like Tractor Supply Company, which has like 2,200 stores. It's probably $13 billion in sales in the US. So this is a Walmart in this business. So they have their own stores. So we are working with them now. So these kind of stores total in the US, I want to say are close to about 4,000, like I said, somewhere between 3,700 to 4,000 stores. Between Tractor Supply and the new account we've taken now, which has 800 stores, I think we're already covering about 3,000 of those. So we've got a nice hold on this. And this is the kind of business, frankly, which just continues on and on and on. I think you've really got to shoot yourself in the foot 20 times before you'll get out of this now. It's impossible to get in, but once you get in, it just stays. And our ability to lever more products into this pipeline is high. So right now we're doing the three-point linkage. You are seeing us launch the UTV, ATV into this segment, right? So technically we're using the same distribution of 3,000 stores to do this. And now we'll look at more products to go into this pipeline. So this is a separate thing in the US. In Europe, all of this is done differently. They have large distributors. So the big customers we have there are like Cramp, which is also, I think, 1.2 billion euros as a company now. So they are into all the distribution to all the different. So they don't have chain stores over there. So they'll service all the dealerships and stuff like that directly from these distributors. So all the top players in Europe, the major distributors, are all our customers, and they've been like that now for like almost everyone is more than 20 years with us.
Sure, sir. Okay. Thank you so much. That's it from my side.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashutosh from Mirabilis Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So first question is for 3PL for higher HP tractors. So any progress that you have made that you can share from the product development as well as business development side for 3PL for higher HP tractors?
Yeah, we're already working with Case New Holland on a few things. We're launching for some tractors in South Korea. We've got some new projects over there that we are working on. And now we're actually bidding on a very large project with John Deere just now. So there are new ones which are already in implementations, which are smaller projects, but a very large project is under a bidding stage at this time.
Okay, great, sir. And second one, so for FY 2025, this way, if we were to exclude the sales for 3PL for UTVs and the new business that we are about to start with Caterpillar, so do you think we will still be growing the base business given that market is still kind of shaky and that you said large is about to go in a down cycle and small is still in an inventory correction phase? So if you were to exclude the Caterpillar as well as the 3PL for UTVs, do you think the base business will still grow?
The base business, I think, will grow back a little bit on the aftermarket side, and it'll also grow on the construction equipment side. We will see downside from the large ag equipment and a smaller downside from the small ag equipment. So overall, I think you will see a slight growth over there. A lot of the growth you will see is because of the new business.
Okay. So great. That would be all. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, we will take this as a last question. As that was the last question, I would now like to hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
Hey, thank you. So thank you, dear all. And I would like to reiterate that we are focusing on utilizing current change period by investing for growth and ensuring readiness and efficient utilization of our resources. We remain committed to maintaining our high-quality standards and delivering exceptional outcomes. Our focus and efforts are aligned with the medium-term business plan for achieving the targeted growth in coming years. With this, I would like to thank you all for taking out your time today for this call, and thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. On behalf of Go India Advisors, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.